Thanks for checking out the podcast of the Church at Lake Travis. If you have any questions about our church, visit us online at churchlt.com.
Appreciate you guys being here this morning. My name is Lee Rutter. I'm the executive pastor here at the Church of Lake Travis. And I did want to encourage you guys, if you were thinking about going to that Connect track, now is the opportunity to do it. We've done Connect 1, Connect 2. You can catch it whenever you want. If you want to jump in on spiritual gifts testing and Connect 3, Mark is going to be leading it this morning. And you can head out the back and let me, who will meet you, Mark will meet you out in the lobby. Did want to encourage those while they're moving around. Just if you are new this morning, we want to welcome you. Let me ask our regulars. Let's give them a little round of applause if you would. Thank you for meeting and hanging out with us this morning. I did want to also give you a heads up. We sang this song just a minute ago called The Lord is in This Place. And I want you to let you know, just to be honest with you, there is a bat in this place too. And so how many of y'all have been to South Congress Bridge to see the bats? Okay, so you all probably didn't run around and yell and scream and get fearful, did you? No, you just enjoyed them. And so if this bat decides to break out this morning, we're just going to go on about our business, okay? We weren't able to catch him beforehand. We have had them in here before. We managed to catch them. But if he rolls out, just a heads up. So anyway, just to let you know that we're going to move on about our business. We were at the mall last week. And we were having dinner in the food court, and they have all these birds, which I got a lot of entertainment out of, just flying around the food court, and they would just land on people's tables and eat, and eat their waffle fries or whatever, and it didn't stop anybody from eating or shopping, and so a bat's not going to stop us this morning. But anyway, appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Today, our Mission Roatan, Roatan mission team is away, and we sent 21 people on that trip, which is so exciting. Jeremy and Charlie, Pastor Jeremy and Charlie are away. They'll be back next week, but we want to be praying for safe travels for them as they come back and return. And today they're going to be having a local island worship experience, which is going to be so cool for them. But anyway, just know we knew today was not going to be a high attendance Sunday. With 21 people out and with our Lake Travis winter break going on right now, we want to just be in prayer for those who are out and about. Appreciate you guys being with us this morning. We jumped into this new series last week, kind of a return to a new series. Jeremy started it over Christmas. He covered Luke 1 and 2, Jesus' birth during Christmas. Last week, we jumped back into Luke 3. And then today, we're going to be in Luke 4, so you guys can be turning over there with me, Luke 4. Beginning in verse 1, and we're not going to read it all as a section. I'm going to cover it throughout the talk. We're just going to kind of walk through it, but Luke brings us good news. That is the theme of this series, is good news. How many of y'all need some good news this morning? Yes, I know I do, and so anyway, we're going to look at what it means for us today as we talk about the temptation of Jesus. Let's pray, and we're going to talk. Dear God, I just thank you for each person here today and their desire to personally worship you. God, I know that we all face temptations of our own sorts, own kinds. We're not all tempted by the same thing. But God, I know that we all have something that we just struggle with this morning. And so, Father God, I pray that we'll learn about how Jesus was able to thwart his temptation and ultimately provide a path, pave a way for us to overcome ours and to be with you even when we fail. God, I pray that you'll speak to us and preach to us this morning. In Jesus' precious and holy name, everybody said, amen, 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 or amen, whichever you prefer. We're going to be looking at temptation, as I said this morning, and specifically, this is the passage where Luke focuses on the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness. And I think about this probably as being a college time in our life. And so Jesus is still wet behind the ears at this point. He just got baptized in Luke 3, and now he is going off into the world to experience the big bad world. And so God says, the passage says, the Spirit sent him out into the wilderness for one purpose, to be tempted. And I sit there and think, for most of us, this is probably like our college experience. How many of you are a college student in here? Do we have any college students? At least one here. So there we go, Keaton. And your parents set me up to speak specifically to you this morning. And so we figured it was probably going to only be you. But college is a big tempt. All of us can say it. We've been through college. It's a big temptation time in our life. And it is a wilderness experience for many of us as we kind of go off out of high school life. And we're like, whoa, it's a free market, a free world, and I have free time. And I can convince my parents that I need extra free money, only free to us, but cost them a lot. And it can be a temptation time of our life. And so if you're trying to identify a really tempting time in your life, that's probably it. But no matter whether we are in that excitement of college and the newness of it and all the opportunities it brings, we all have something, my friends, that I know that we are tempted by this morning. Something that you're tempted by. And we're going to look at three things that Satan tried to tempt Jesus with. And so the Spirit sends him out into the wilderness to be tempted, specifically says that. And Jesus doesn't get like some JV demon. It's not junior varsity demon. He gets El Diablo, the devil himself. After 40 days, imagine us. I've done a fast where I fasted for 70 days, practically blacked out. And I was at the lowest point of my ability to stand up to temptation. But yet we find Jesus in that scenario. And so it says this. It says this in verse 1. It says, Jesus, full of the Holy Spirit, left the Jordan, it's where he'd just been baptized, and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, where for 40 days he was tempted by the devil. He ate nothing during those days, and at the end of them, he was hungry. Hungry. It's not anything to really interpret there. It's not some theologically deep thing. He hasn't eaten for 40 days, and so he is hungry. He's like, I mean, if you're like me, after 7 days, I'm hangry, he's hungry. And so he's at a temptable point in his life, isn't he? But it is so key for us to get, as we look at these three temptations, what he is tempted by. He doesn't tempt him with like some illicit thing. He doesn't tempt him with like, he's not like some shady guy in a shadowy corner of a parking lot with a trench coat, opening it up and going, hey, come over here and buy some of this, right? He's offering him good things. The first thing that he comes out with, real hard hitting here, Jesus turned those stones into bread. Bread, I mean, last I checked, to me, there's no moral code or law against bread, whether you're a good carb, bad carb kind of person, right? Can we all agree there's nothing just innately wrong with bread, right? And that's his first temptation. The devil says, turn these stones into bread. And it's huge for us to get this morning, my friends. Your biggest temptations in life are not going to be the illicit things. They're not necessarily going to be red light district things. They're going to be good things. And what happens is the devil in all these takes a good thing and tempts Jesus to make it into an ultimate thing. And when we go wrong in our lives, when we go off track from that singular focus that we have, from what God is, the mission that God has for you in your life, is when we are tempted to make good things God things, and then they become bad things. And so it is so key for us to get, my friends, that God's going to take what is good in our lives and make it a temptation. And that's what we see Satan doing this morning. So he comes in and he says this. In verse 3, he says, the devil said to him, if you're the Son of God, tell this stone to become bread. Again, the devil isn't coming after him with like some shady guy side of a, you know, offering him things. He's not tempting him to start a prostitution ring. He's not tempting him to become like, you know, become a drug lord or something like that. He says, hey, turn this stone into bread. You're hungry. Do something simple for you. It's a comfort food, bread. He comes at him with bread. It's just that, it's bread. There's no thou shalt not bread in the Bible, right? I mean, even garlic bread. The Bible doesn't speak about that. It's all good, okay? That's what he comes at him with. We were at a Christian camp a few years ago, and this camp is so good at taking their message and turning it into an experience that the kids get to go through. And they really create these experiences that kids will never forget that tie to the central theme of the day. And so they have these worship experiences every night. At the end of them, they would run this commercial. And the commercial was for a Wednesday night middle of the week, hump day, middle of camp experience, party. And this isn't just party, it's partay. Okay, the kids are so pumped up about it. Like, it is free snow cones, Skittles. Remember the big sumo suits that you put on? Sumo suit wrestling, blow it out, sumo suit dance party. I mean, Mario Kart, everything that was, I mean, it's free Skittles. They're like, this is what the party's going to be about. And at the end of the commercial, the kids were so fired up about it. There's like this furor in the room, and they're all just chatter. And they're talking about who they're going to invite to the dance party and who they're going to dance with at the dance party and who's going to win at Mario Kart and who's the best. And then at the end of that, they would very subtly play another commercial, and it was for a Bible study at the same time as the party. How many kids do you think even heard about the party? Very few. In fact, I'll tell you the number in just a second. So then middle week, Wednesday night, the party comes around, and all the kids show up, and they got their best hair together. They've got their makeup done. I think even some of the guys will wear makeup. They wanted to make sure they looked awesome. I mean, there were so much acts in the room before I was leaving. Like, I had to wear a respirator mask to walk around. I was, like, choking because of all the acts. They were just spraying. So anyway, they go. They're having a great time. They got Mario Kart, sumo wrestling, dancing. And all of a sudden, after about an hour, things just start breaking. And the sumo suit supposedly popped. And the Mario Kart went glitchy. And the music just went away. And then they left them. Everything was quiet. And they blacked out the room. And the thing the kids hadn't paid attention to, it was an open-air worship facility where they did all their events and things. But it had a roof on it. But they had taken and wrapped them in. And so what they did is they turned out all the lights. And they couldn't now choose. There was nothing to do, but they couldn't choose to go to the Bible study. And so it was quiet for like 5 minutes, just black. And to kids, that's like an hour, right? Some of the girls next to me were like, they're going to kill us. And I was like, yeah, it's what Christian camp is for, my friends. And last week's group, nobody found out after they killed them and their parents didn't complain. It's crazy. And here we are the next week. They let them just kind of sit in silence. And then after a while, they started playing these videos. And it was things, good things, like high school graduation, going off to college, like first dating relationship, like friends, like family. And then at the end of this, they just played the verse, and it said this, the verse that we all know. It says, he who loses his life will gain it, and the one who hangs on to his life will eventually lose it. And it is such a temptation, as we see this morning, for Satan to take good things in our life and for good things to become God things, and when they do, they become bad things. And I loved how they finished out this experience for the kids. Definitely drove home the point. They played a live video feed of the 8 kids who chose the Bible study. I love it. And they took all the sumo suits over to the Bible study and all the Skittles and the snow cones. And kids are like in the sumo suits and they're having a dance party and they're just rolling around in Skittles, man. And the theme for that day really got brought home. The one who loses his life, who gives it up, finds it. And I think when we realize the temptation that we have that's placed in our life, when we thwart it, that we put it away, that we end up finding what God really has to offer us. Jesus knows this, and we've got to know it too. So in verse 4, he tells Satan, man shall not live on bread alone. And that's the key for us, my friends, is to realize we cannot live on whatever alone. Fill in the blank. We cannot live off of family alone. We cannot live off of food, and that's a temptation enough for some of us. We cannot not live off of food alone, even Chick-fil-A. And we're about to give you a chance for 7 weeks. We're going to go without food, right? Boo, piss, right? We're going to get, it may be a car, it may be a job, it may be a relationship, fill in the blank, but that may be your temptation. And Jesus says, those temptations, whatever they are, cannot bear up underneath the weight of your worship. When good things become God things at the pinnacle of your life, they cannot bear up underneath those expectations that we have for them. Not our spouse, no matter how much we think we love them and how awesome they are. Not our children. God forbid we place them at the top. We're going to talk about that in a second. They cannot stand up to that temptation. What are some of the fleshly temptations that you have in your life. We're going to answer that here in a few minutes in communion time. Moving on to verse 5, it says this: the devil led him to a high place, showed him in an instant all the kingdoms of the world. And he said to him, I will give you all authority and splendor. It's been given to me. And I can give it to anyone I want to. If you worship me, it will be yours. And so the devil takes him up to our Mount Benel. And he's overlooking all these awesome Austin, the best that Austin has to offer in terms of homes. Multi-million dollar homes on Lake Austin. But the key isn't in the fancy or the things. That's not, what does he say here? He takes him up to see all the kingdoms of the world. And he says, I'm going to give you their authority and their splendor. I'm going to give you power, Jesus. I'm going to give you the ability to control your destiny and your future. Right now, you walk into a room and you have no idea how people are going to respond to you. In one room, they love you and they're like, this man is king. He's prince. Let's enthrone him. In the next room, as we're going to see later on in chapter 4, if you read a little further beyond the text we're going to cover this morning, they want to throw him off a cliff. And Satan is saying, look, I'm going to give you so much power that you can now control others' responses. You can manipulate them. I'm going to give you all authority and splendor. For some of us, that's a big temptation. And look, this is the key. I don't think it's necessarily power that we want. I don't. If you're a power person, I don't know what power that you want. I think this is what you want, control. But power gives you the leverage then to then control, right? If we have power, others bow down to us. Others will do whatever we say. Others are always at fault. And this is a big thing for us to get. I want to bring this home with our marriages because I think it applies in our own home. And so I find very often when we get married that there's kind of two people in life, okay? There are those who think that everybody else is always at fault. It's person one. Which category are you in? There's then the other who thinks it's always their fault. So the person who thinks it's always someone else's fault, this is the golfer who misses the putt on the 18th hole. What do they always do? They go and tap down the spot that caused them to miss the putt, that knocked their ball off the green. It's always something else's fault, right? And then you might have the spouse, God forbid they be married together, who says, it's always my fault. I will take the blame for it until I explode. But out of fear or wanting to keep the peace or shame in their life, they're willing to just deal with whatever the person throws their way. But I believe that we demand this control or manipulate this control out of the other person. If that's a temptation for us that says, look, I want to shape you to be the person that I want you to be. But that's the ultimate question that I have. We're reading this good book, young couple that's with us this morning, that we're doing some premarital counseling. I love in this book, he talks about spiritual friendship and how the point of marriage is spiritual friendship. And he says this, he says, the point of spiritual friendship is that we help that other person become their glory selves. And I love that term. It's not lifting up yourself, but it is a sanctification process that God takes us through, and marriage will sanctify us. Children will sanctify us if we allow it to, if we allow them to. But the point for all of this is that we become the person that God intends us to be. Hello, Connect Track 3 and what Mark's doing this morning about leading them to discover their spiritual gifts and how God's created them to be. Are we just shaping them into the person that we want them to be? Or are we allowing to watch, stand back, and be a part of the process of God shaping them into the person that He intends for them to be, their glory selves? The risk for it is that if we just are that manipulative control spouse, they're always at fault, they're the one to blame. The risk is this: all we create is a Stepford wife, a Stepford husband, who's robotic, who's just avoiding an explosion at all costs. But guess what? They will explode eventually. I've seen it. They will eventually say, enough is enough. And today's the day, and I'm done with this relationship. Are we allowing them to become their glory selves, or just who we want them to be? Do we allow Jesus to be ruler over our household? Jesus comes back to Satan and says this: worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Perhaps you're here today and you have that saying that says, as for me and my house, the verse, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Jesus says, worship the Lord your God only in your house, in your family. Are you really serving the Lord only? Are you allowing Him to be ruler of the household and your life and your relationship? And you're on the side, both of y'all, or are you putting yourself as control manipulator at the top of the pyramid, at the peak of the pinnacle? Jesus says, worship the Lord your God only. Let's get to the last temptation. And I want you to catch as we transition to the third one. So the first one, first temptation, we have comfort. I mean, Jesus, we have flesh and appetite. Satan says, look, here's some bread. You're hungry. He tempts flesh. He tempts our appetite. The second one, he tempts with power. He says, here's the stuff. You can have control. You can control your own future. I want us to catch in all these what he ultimately, the overarching umbrella underneath all of these is he tempts us with this. There's a theme. There's a thread between all of them. Comfort. That's what ultimately he offers. I don't want you to suffer, Jesus. Here's some bread. I don't want you to suffer, Jesus. Here's some control and power. And thirdly, he comes back and says, I don't want you to suffer, Jesus. Here is safety, which can become a big God for us here in LTISD area. The comfort trend continues. He says this in verse 9, the devil led him to Jerusalem and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. And if you are the Son of God, he said, throw yourself down from here, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you to guard you carefully. They will lift up they will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. The last temptation that Satan offers, that the devil offers Jesus, is safety. That may not seem like a very big temptation for you, right? But I really want you to think about it. Maybe safety is at the top of the pyramid for you, at the peak of the pinnacle. Comfort is a huge temptation. Safety is a huge temptation. I just think about our children right here in Lake Travis in LTISD. Most of us choose to live here because we can afford it. And I would challenge that much of what we pay for are these two things, safety and comfort. Does Satan tempt you, say, throwing yourself off the top of this? And I promise nothing will happen to you. We've already created that lifestyle. So we live in a gated community within a gated community. I was talking to Steve this morning, our police officer Steve this morning, and I said, how many police officers do we have in the Lake Travis area? And he said, for 15,000, we have 35. For 15,000 people. And I said, is per capita, that's probably the highest, one of the highest in the state of Texas. He was like, yeah, absolutely. For the amount of people, that's absolutely a high percentage because we want to live in a safe place. And my friends, guess what? We have almost as many golf courses as we do police officers. Hello, comfort, all right? We like our comfort. We like our security. And based on the lifestyle that we paid a lot, I would challenge us to say, is that not at the peak of our pinnacle? Now, is it a good thing becoming a God thing that then becomes a bad thing? That's the ultimate question for each one of us. Where it really shows itself, I believe, is in our children. It kind of like filters, funnels all down into our children. And so that's where I see it saying, I have this child and I've got to protect them at all cost. And I know this. I mean, I had my child, I had Bren first, and I was praying for a boy. I wanted a hunting and fishing buddy. God gave me a girl. And I all of a sudden knew this fear and rage, they both go together, that I never knew before. Not about her, but because of protecting her. This was my baby girl. She's beautiful. I got to protect her at all costs. A little boy, I'm like, rub some dirt on it, bro. Go walk it off. Little girl, she falls down like, oh, baby, are you okay? Who hurt you? Right? I remember we took her to school one day. She's coming out of school, and she's got this frown that I knew. She had this sense in her spirit. You know this as a parent. I was like, something's up. I'm like, Bren, what happened today? There was this one little girl in her class. I won't name names. I have her on my dartboard, though. But anyway, little girl, third grade, and she's got this posse, this crew. And all of a sudden, Mean Girls has broken out in third grade, right? The movie was made in third grade, B Cave Elementary, Mean Girls. And so she's got a birthday party coming up, and they're doing a makeup party. And I don't care about that, really don't. But she'd invited every other girl in the class other than Bryn. And so this anger over how she was being treated and fear of how that would impress upon her came out in me. And then I see all these moms that are I know are going to the party, and they're all planning their day together. And I just start thinking these horrific thoughts, even as a pastor. I'm like, hey, you're beautiful and your mom's beautiful, and one day you're going to steal all their boyfriend's baby, okay? I want you to know that now. I didn't say that, but I was thinking it. Right? I wanted her to write it on their Valentine's card. I'm prettier than you are. I started thinking like really mean things, and I knew this like anger and fear that I'd never known before. It became a temptation for me. I just want to protect my baby girl at all costs. And all of a sudden, Satan was tempting me, going, is your daughter at the peak of your pinnacle? Is she a good thing that's become a God thing in your life? And I sit there and go, you know what? Lake Travis ISD may be one of the safest places to live, but it can also be one of the most dangerous for your children. It really can't. We have, you know, I see these black helicopters roving around Lake Travis. Have you ever seen them? They're not secret ops government wings. They're mom hovering. And so we microchip our children to know exactly where they're at, GPS, location. We background check all our kids. We want to live in that gated community within a gated community because maybe children have become at the peak, have taken over the spot at the peak of our pinnacle. And safety for them, safety for us as a family has become so key. I really want to challenge you. One of the best things, so this week I shared earlier, we have 21 people, all families, who have gone on a Roatan mission trip. And this was a big deal for them, my friends. It was a big deal for them, not only financially, but to leave the bubble of the Lake Travis area and for their kids to be able to see a different side of life and to begin to see everything's not safe. And when I'm complaining about the four Barbies, the four Barbies that I got for Christmas and only the one pink Corvette, or I got a 2015 Camaro and not the 2019, how can I ever show my face at Lake Travis ISD High School? That they had the opportunity, these families invested in an incredible way for their kids to say, you know, everything in the world is not safe, and it's not. And if we are telling our children that, this is one of the most dangerous places that we could ever live. It is the most dangerous place that we could ever live. Because when they move out of this place thinking the world revolves around them, and all of a sudden, hello college, hello spouse, hello children, and with every one of those moves, you get pushed further and down the totem pole. Man, if they thought that the universe revolved around them, their head's going to explode. That's the most dangerous place for them to be. I love how Jesus ends up responding to Satan. He says this. Jesus says this. He says, do not put the Lord your God to the test. When the devil has finished all this tempting, he left him until an opportune time. Until an opportune time. He's coming back. And you know, you want to know when that is? It was during Jesus' greatest temptation. As we come to our communion time this morning, my friends, Jesus goes to the Garden of Gethsemane to put a bookend on his greatest temptation. It started here in the wilderness with his 40 days temptation experience. And he finishes up in the Garden of Gethsemane. We all failed. We did. Adam and Eve, through Adam and Eve, if we were Adam and my wife was Eve, I would have failed in the garden. All of us would have. We failed in our garden experience. But here Jesus is at the Garden of Gethsemane being tempted again by Satan. He knows what Jesus' purpose is, to defeat not only him, but more importantly, sin, to take on the sins of the world, yours and my sins, most importantly, and make a way so that we can be with God through his death on the cross. And Jesus is wrestling with that, just like we do. He is wrestling with that decision because he knows the pain and anguish that he's going to experience. And on the cross, he verbally expresses it and says, "My God, my God," perhaps the greatest temptation, what he knew what was going to happen. My God, why have you forsaken me?" I don't mean to minimize the crown of thorns. I don't mean to minimize the spear in his side. I don't mean to minimize the lashings that he took. But I venture to say that was the most crushing thing that he experienced and he knew was coming. So he is wrestling with it to the point of drops of blood coming out of his pores. And that's the greatest temptation. And Jesus gets up and goes to the cross. In spite of that. And I love how Hebrews 4 wraps up that test. And it says this. It says this in Hebrews 4, 15 through 16. "For we do not have a high priest." This is Jesus. "For we do not have a high priest." We have a high priest, Jesus, who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses. "But we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, and did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need." That passage is beautiful because we can know that because he did not give into the test, did not give into the temptation, he didn't fail his garden experience or his wilderness experience, but as the passage says, stood in the face of temptation and did not sin. And I love how it wraps it up. And it says, because we have a high priest, Jesus, who has faced that, we can go boldly in grace before the throne of God. Perhaps your temptation becomes this. After temptation becomes accusation. Beforehand, you're bold and you're confident and God will forgive you and your liberal view of God's grace. Don't worry about it. God's okay. He's going to forgive you. But then after, you know what Satan does? He comes back and says, "You're a bum. How could you ever?" Listen to what this passage says. Because he faced temptation and did not sin, we can go now boldly before the throne of God in grace, knowing that he has paved a way for us. As we come to our communion time, my friends, I want you to ask a couple of things of yourselves. We have communion up front, in the back. We have our prayer team. You can pray with them. This is your time. Band's going to do another song. I want to encourage you just to bow your heads and your hearts. And I want you to ask these simple questions. What are my temptations right now? It's going to be different for all of us. Are they fleshly? Is it our appetite? Is it control? Is it power and control? Is it safety? Probably venture to say it's one of those things in here. What is it for you? Y'all bow your heads and your hearts.
Thanks again for listening to our podcast. Our mission is to lead people into a life-giving relationship with Jesus Christ, and our prayer is that you are closer to Jesus as a result of listening today.